Now look, Toby said. You won, and you can't cop out on it. That's poor sportsmanship. Anybody can think of a little old question about the future. I'll bet even Marshall could think up a lot of questions, and he's only 4 years old. I can think up 3 bags full, Marshall said. Nobody ever got away with calling Ken a poor sportsman. His chin got the hard look it got just before he slammed a home run, and after a minute, you could tell he'd thought of something because his ears got red. Okay, he said. I got a question. Give me the paper. At that point, Melanie suggested that perhaps the questions to the oracle ought to be written in hieroglyphics. But for some reason, Toby was against it. As soon as Ken had written his question, Toby grabbed the folded paper, and stepping up to the new altar, he started right in being the priest of the oracle. By the time a certain party realized what had happened, she was too interested in what was going on to argue. Toby pressed the slip of paper to his forehead and walked 3 times around the temple. Then he made Ken kneel before the altar of Thoth and press the paper to Thoth's forehead, while Toby sprinkled them both with holy water from the tuna can. Next, he hung the paper on one of Thoth's long, sharp toenails and sprinkled it with more holy water. Finally, he waved it back and forth in the smoke from the incense burner, chanting, "Hear us, O Thoth, ancient and wise! Hear us and answer." There was no doubt about it. Toby made a great high priest. The other Egyptians were so caught up in his smooth solemnity and exalted priestly expression that they found themselves almost believing, well, half believing, that Toby was actually talking to an ancient and powerful being, and that something strange and supernatural was about to happen. So, when Toby turned to them a moment later and thundered, "Kneel and bow low, O ancient Egyptians, before the miracle of the oracle," they hurried to obey. A moment later, when they lifted their foreheads from the temple floor, the scrap of paper was hanging in Thoth's curved beak, and Toby was backing away from the altar, bowing at every step. When Toby had backed to where the others were kneeling, he got them up and hustled them out of the temple. Out in the middle of the storage yard, he dropped his high priest expression. In his normal voice, he said, "Well, I guess we might as well cut out. If we hang around, somebody's going to read what's on Ken's question before tomorrow, and that would ruin everything." April's eyes flattened. "Like what, for instance?" she asked. "Just what do you have in mind that might get ruined, Mr. Oracle?" "Have in mind?" Toby said, giving her the wide-eyed innocence treatment. "I don't have anything in mind. It's just that I don't want anybody else to, either. At least, not until we find out what the Oracle can do all by itself." "Wait a minute, Tobe," Ken said, looking worried again. "You don't mean you think there's a chance it might? How about what you said before, about the gods not getting the message and all that? Sheesh! Sometimes I think the whole bunch of you guys are going off your rockers." Toby gave Ken a reassuring grin. "Cool it," he said. "I don't think anything. At least not anything for sure. I just think we ought to give it a chance. Then, if nothing happens, we can take turns being the one who makes up the answers. But what I do think is, you never can tell about a thing like this." He lowered his voice mysteriously. "After all, it used to work, didn't it? I mean, all those other oracles weren't just kid stuff. Even kings and generals and all sorts of other adults used to go for this oracle stuff, didn't they?" "Well?" As one person, the six Egyptians turned and looked back into the temple shed. The sun was very low, and the shade was deep in the back of the temple, where the new altar to Thoth had been built. The huge, tattered owl seemed to be leaning forward, staring into the incense burner. And as they watched, a final twist of fragrant smoke curled upward like a dancing snake and seemed to wind itself around the head of Thoth. Someone moved towards the opening in the fence, and the other five followed so quickly that it was almost as if nobody much wanted to be the last one out into the alley. The Oracle Speaks. The next day, by prearrangement, all the Egyptians met in the alley and entered the land of Egypt together. Toby said that was necessary, so no one would have a chance to fool around with the oracle before everyone was there. Once inside the yard, everyone looked at Toby, but Toby looked at April. "Okay, Bastet," he said. "You wanted to be the oracle priestess, so today it's your turn. You can do the ceremony of returning to the oracle for the answer. That is, unless you don't think you can think up a good answer." "I can think of answers to anything," April said. "But I thought you were expecting the oracle to do its own answers. Or did you change your mind?"
"Oh, no," Toby said. "I didn't change my mind. I just thought you ought to have some good answers ready, just in case. So, let's get going."
So April took charge. To get everyone in the mood, she got the box of costumes out of the shed and had everyone put something on. A headdress or a robe, or at least some jewelry. Then she set the scene. "Okay," she said. "Horemheb, the famous general, has come on a pilgrimage to the grotto of the Oracle of Thoth to ask a terribly important question. He arrived at the grotto a few days ago and asked his question. And since then he has been fasting in a holy cell while he waits for the answer." You know, people who were going to the Oracle had to prepare themselves very carefully. So they usually shut themselves up for days without any food and meditated until they felt very pure and sort of dizzy. And then they were ready to go. So that's what you've been doing, Ken. Ken looked self-conscious, and Melanie made a funny smothered sound. April was careful not to catch her eye. She knew that Melanie was trying not to laugh at the idea of solid old Ken being pure and dizzy. April hurried on. "The rest of us are priests and attendants of the Oracle. And I'm the High Priestess, who is the only one who can go into the altar room where the Oracle gives out the answers." Next, April had everyone help make some twisted paper logs to burn in the sacred fire bowl. And then she lined them all up for a procession to the grotto. Ken was in the middle, in the place of honor, and April demonstrated to him how he should walk, with his hands crossed over his chest and his eyes sort of rolled up. April herself led the procession, and when they had gone twice around the yard, she lined everyone up on the edge of the temple. Then she approached the altar alone. First, she lit the candles and the incense and the sacred fire, and put the fire bowl on the floor in front of the altar. On the altar, Thoth still sat with a slip of paper in his beak, exactly as they'd left him the night before. April bowed low before him and started in on an elaborate ceremony, using some of the old things they'd done before and some new ones she'd just thought up. She walked around the altar backwards 3 times, sprinkling holy water. She pulled out 3 hairs from her head and dropped them on the fire. Then she sat down, cross-legged, between the fire and the altar, and began to chant. Melanie sat down too, on the edge of the temple floor, and motioned for the others to do the same. "Ai!" April chanted, making her voice go up and down the scale. And along the edge of the temple, the other Egyptians took it up. When the wailing chant was going strong, April suddenly cried, "Stop! The mighty Thoth has heard us. The oracle has spoken." Very slowly and dramatically, with her eyes half closed and her face smoothed into a dream-like calmness, April raised her arms above her head and with both hands took the message from the beak of Thoth. Very, very slowly, she brought it down to eye level and unfolded it. She read it carefully and then turned it over and read the other side. Her calmly regal high priestess expression faded, and she frowned as she read each side again. Then she stood up and stomped out of the temple. The rest of the Egyptians jumped up. "Okay," April said. "Who's the wise guy?" "Wise guy? What's the matter? What does it say?" Everybody was talking at once. "What did you write on this paper yesterday?" April asked Ken. "What was your question?" Ken shrugged. "Oh, I don't know," he said. "Just some dumb stuff about if I was going to be a star in the big league someday." April held out the slip of paper, and everybody crowded around to look. In Ken's large, neat handwriting, it said, "Will I be a big league star someday?" "Yeah, that's it," Ken said. "That's what I wrote." But then April turned the paper over, so the other side was visible. In a different handwriting, small and jittery, there was written, "Man is his own star, and that soul who can be honest is the only perfect man." "How about that?" April asked. "Did you write that too?" "Me?" Ken said in amazement. "Heck no! I didn't have time to write all that. Besides, I don't even know what it means." April and Melanie looked at each other and nodded. It was true. It didn't sound like anything Ken would do. They turned to Toby. "Okay, Toby," April said. "When did you write this?" Toby looked disgusted. "Let's not get ridiculous," he said. "How could I have written all that without anybody seeing me?" "Well, you must have," April said, "because I know none of the rest of us did it." "Oh, yeah?" Toby said. "I'll bet you did it yourself." From there on, the argument began to get louder and more personal. There were accusations and counter-accusations, but no one would admit to writing the mysterious and puzzling words that straggled across the back of Ken's question. It was finally Melanie who made peace by suggesting that maybe they should try the whole thing again and see what happened, instead of fighting about it. "We can watch to see that nobody writes an answer, and then if we get another answer, and we know none of us wrote it..." Her voice trailed off, and nobody offered to finish the sentence for her. It was the kind of thought that isn't easily finished. It was April who won the straw drawing this time, and she thought quite a while before she decided on a question. After she had written it on a piece of notebook paper, she showed everyone the clean, clear back of the paper before she handed it, folded, to Toby for the ceremony of presenting the question to the oracle. Toby presided again as the high priest, and his ceremony was almost exactly the same as the day before. That is, the things Toby did were just about the same, but somehow the feeling was different. Or perhaps, not so much different as more so. More spooky and supernatural. Even though all the Egyptians were positive that somebody was fooling and had somehow managed to write the answer to Ken's question, there are times when being positive isn't quite enough. There wasn't much light in the land of Egypt that afternoon, which didn't make it all less strange. The days had been getting shorter, of course, but it was something more than a gradual seasonal change, too. As Toby bowed and mumbled and chanted before the altar of Thoth, his high priest face looking distant and unfamiliar in the deep shadow and flickering candlelight, low black clouds were moving in swiftly from the bay. In the temple, it was suddenly so dark that the reflected candles lit Thoth's glassy stare with points of fire. Then, just as Toby was finishing his ceremony, there was a huge, shuddering, thumping noise that seemed to come from everywhere at once. Elizabeth gave a little scream, and everyone rushed out of the temple. It wasn't until a rain-filled blast of air swept into the land of Egypt a moment later that the noise was recognized for what it was. Thunder! That was thunder! Everybody started saying to each other in voices that were giggly with relief. Somehow, without quite knowing how they'd gotten there, they were all six standing in a rather tight little group in the center of the storage yard. And rain! Wow! Somebody added. That was the day they found out that it really was impossible for more than one person at a time to get through the hole in the fence, no matter how hard they tried. Where is security? The next day, all six Egyptians waited with great impatience for the end of school and the time to meet in the land of Egypt. Everyone was anxious to see if April's question would be answered, but two of the Egyptians had a special reason of their own to be impatient. Marshall had lost his octopus, security, and there was reason to believe that it had been left in Egypt the night before. Marshall wanted security back, and Melanie wanted Marshall to quit pestering her and be himself again. The night before, when everyone had left Egypt in such a hurry, they had been too busy getting away from the rain, and the darkness and question mysteriously answered, to remember about security. Not even Marshall had thought of it. And then, just as Marshall and Melanie got back to their apartment, their dad had come in early from the university. He had just been promised a teaching assistantship for the spring semester, and he had been in the mood for a celebration. He had rushed Marshall and Melanie into the car, and they had driven to the school where their mom taught, and then they had all gone out to dinner. It was an exciting and unusual evening, because until Dad got out of school, money was scarce, and they didn't eat out very often. In fact, it had been such an interesting evening that Marshall hadn't had time to remember about security until they were home. Melanie had been climbing into bed when Marshall came into her room. The minute she had looked at him, she had known what was wrong. Either security was lost, or the world was coming to an end. It had to be that serious. Of course, Marshall had wanted to go out right then to Egypt, and Melanie had had a hard time convincing him that it was impossible. It was late, they were both ready for bed, and outdoors the rain was coming down in a great wet roar. Mom and Dad would never let them go alone, and if Dad went with them, the other Egyptians would never forgive them for giving away Egypt to a grown-up. Melanie had known that Marshall understood the importance of what she was saying, and that he was trying awfully hard to believe that it was all more important than finding security. He had gone to the window and stood looking out at the waves of rain that swooshed against the pane. When he came back to Melanie's bed, His chin was wiggling.
But security will drown if I don't go get him, he had said. Melanie had taken hold of his shoulders. Marshall, honey, octopuses can't drown. They live in water, she had said. Marshall had hung his head, and finally he had sighed and said very softly, But security is another kind of octopus.
Just then, Melanie had thought of something that helped. You know what? I'll bet you didn't leave security in Egypt at all.
Now that I think about it, I don't remember seeing him there today. I'll bet you left him at nursery school. I'll bet he's safe and sound in the playroom at nursery school, and you can get him in the morning when you get to school.
Then Melanie had taken Marshall back to his bed and tucked him in. She wasn't at all sure that she believed security was at the nursery school, and she knew that Marshall didn't either. But they had both tried to believe it as hard as they could. In the morning, it had still been pouring down rain when it was time to go to school, and Melanie's dad had insisted on taking everyone to school in his car on his way to the university. So there had been no chance to check to see if security really was in the land of Egypt. And, just as they both had feared, he had not been at the nursery school. So there had been nothing they could do but wait for school to be over and the time for Egypt to come. Fortunately, it had stopped raining during the day, although the sun never came out. But when the time finally came, and all six Egyptians squeezed back through the fence into Egypt, security wasn't there either. The storage yard was wet and muddy and bare. Inside the temple, things were damp and messy from the wind-blown rain. Ashes and papers were blown around, and some plastic flowers had fallen off the birdbath. But there was no sign of security anywhere. That day, Marshall wouldn't even take part in the ceremony. He just sat on a box against the fence and watched with big, sad eyes. Everybody tried to talk to him and cheer him up, but he wouldn't answer. Looking at him, the others remembered with a feeling of shock that he was awfully little. He usually seemed bigger. Somehow, no one felt very enthusiastic about starting the ceremony, without really knowing why. It was almost as if they were a little bit afraid of finding out whether there was any mysterious writing on the slip of paper that still hung, damply limp, from Thoth's beak. But at last Melanie, whose turn it was to be High Priestess, got things going. She did pretty much what April had done the day before, until she got to the part where she took the slip of paper out of Thoth's beak and read it. On one side was April's question, just what Melanie had thought it would be. When will I go home again? And on the other side, Melanie looked up at the other Egyptians with wide eyes, and then she turned and looked, long and hard, at Thoth. Finally, she walked right out of the temple, threw the paper on the ground, and said, I think we just better stop playing this awful game. Everyone crowded around, grabbing for the paper and asking questions. As it went the rounds, it left a lot of startled faces behind it. The back of the paper, which they all knew had been clean and blank when they had left Egypt the night before, was now covered with writing. In the same small, wavery hand that had answered Ken's question, the oracle had written, The best thing we can do is to make wherever we're lost in look as much like home as we can. Again, no one had seen the words written. Again, what they said didn't sound like anything that a kid would make up. Something very strange was going on. As one man, the five biggest Egyptians turned and looked at their temple. There, on the left, was the altar to Set that they had built themselves from nothing but an old egg crate, and on top of it was the made-by-hand statue of Set, looking a little more sunken and slimy than usual from the blowing rain of the night before. On the right was the birdbath altar with the plaster head of Nefertiti, lovely and gracious in spite of the cracks and chips. And at the back was the new altar to Thoth, with its candles and incense still burning in front of an old stuffed owl that Toby had cut his teeth on. It had only been a game. Of course, it had been a very special one, more serious and important and mysterious than most, and a lot more fun. And there had been times when it had seemed to have a mysterious sort of reality about it. But no one had believed, when you came right down to it, that it was anything more than a game. At least, no one had until today. "I think Ross is right," Ken said suddenly. "I told you guys before there was something kooky about this whole thing." He grinned at Toby. "How about it, Tobe? You ready to go back to basketball?" Toby shrugged. "I think you guys are a bunch of chickens," he said. "Just when things get good and something really exciting starts happening, you want to cop out. What I want to know is, if you don't dig a little excitement, why'd you start fooling around with stuff like Egyptian gods and ancient magic in the first place?" "Look, wise guy," April said, "it just so happens that I didn't say I wanted to cop out. And if you're so crazy about excitement, why don't you go jump off the bridge or something? That ought to be exciting enough to suit you. It just so happens that some people think there's such a thing as too much excitement." Toby grinned at April in a way that said he wasn't looking for a fight. "I'm not arguing," he said. "If everyone wants to split, it's all right by me. Let's just forget..."
"No,"
Marshall said suddenly in a loud, clear voice. It was the first thing he'd said since he found out that security definitely wasn't in Egypt.
"No."
Marshall got up off his box and came over to where the rest of them were standing. His chin was up, and he was looking much more like himself. "Let's not stop. Let's not stop till I ask a question. I'm going to ask about security." Everybody tried to talk him out of it. April and Melanie and Elizabeth all tried because they could see how hard he was going to take it if the oracle didn't come through. And for some reason, Toby tried hardest of all. He squatted down by Marshall and talked to him a long time about how he didn't think that was the kind of question that oracles answered. But Marshall only shut his eyes and shook his head and said, "No." And everybody knew that Marshall never said no unless he meant it. So Melanie wrote, "Where is security?" on a piece of paper, because Marshall didn't do much writing yet, and Toby went through the ceremony just as he had the two times before. Marshall went home acting almost as if security had already been found, but everyone else went home worried. Melanie and April and Elizabeth and Ken didn't quite know whether to worry because the question might be answered or because it might not be. The whole thing was getting to be so weird and creepy that they couldn't really wish for another answer. But at the same time, what were they going to do about Marshall? But Toby was the most worried of all. Confession and Confusion. That night, while the Oracle of Thoth in the land of Egypt struggled with the question, "Where is security?" Toby Alvilar struggled with his conscience. He thought and worried and thought, and at last he broke down and did something entirely against his principles. He called up a girl. When April answered, all he said was, "Look, I gotta talk to you and Ross tomorrow early. Meet you out by the parallel bars first recess. Can't talk now. Party line." He had it all worked out so it wouldn't look fishy. When recess started, he went whooping down the hall and down the stairs with the rest of the guys who were headed for the basketball court. But on the way down the stairs, he pretended to stumble and turn his ankle. He denied that he was badly hurt, but he managed to look bravely in pain as he stumbled over to sit out the recess on the bench near the parallel bars. The girls were in the midst of a jump rope fad, so the parallel bars were pretty much deserted. When April and Melanie wandered over and registered exaggerated surprise to find him there, he got right to the point. "Look," he said, "I was the one who wrote those answers. I was the oracle. But I don't know where Marshall's old octopus is. What are we going to do?" Of course, April and Melanie had a lot to say. They made Toby explain how he'd managed to steal a peek at the questions while he was conducting the ceremonies, while everybody was bowing. And then he'd looked up the main words in a big book of his dad's, called Somebody's Famous Quotations. Then, when he'd picked out a nice mysterious quotation, he'd sneaked back to Egypt at night with a flashlight and written it on the back of the paper. "But how'd you get out of the house like that, late at night and in the rain and everything? Did your folks know?" "Did my folks know?" Toby said. Girls could ask the dumbest questions at times. "Fat chance! They never bother me in the evenings. They're usually working late in my dad's studio, or off at some blast somewheres. It was a cinch." "Weren't you scared?" Melanie asked. "Going down there all by yourself, alone, in the dark?" "Well," Toby admitted, "I wasn't exactly whistling Yankee Doodle, if you know what I mean." "Did you happen to notice that the Oracle's handwriting was a little bit shaky?" "Well, I didn't just do that to disguise my writing. As a matter of fact, I was about to quit the Oracle business even before the rest of you decided to, yesterday. That last night when I went down there, there was somebody in the alley when I was going home." The girls gasped. "Honestly? In the rain and everything? Are you sure?" "As sure as I'd want to be. In fact, for a couple of seconds he was just a few steps behind me. It was too dark to see his face. But he was there, all right." "Oh, what did you do? How'd you get away?" "How'd I get away? Look, Melanie, you ought to know how I got away. Who's been the fastest runner in our class ever since second grade?" "You," Melanie agreed. "Right. And when I saw someone behind me, I really cut out. I mean, jet-propelled or something." Toby could always manage to be funny, even about something that was really pretty scary. But after a while, Melanie quit laughing and said, "But who do you think it was? What if it was the man who..." "The murderer, you mean?" Toby interrupted. "Yeah, I thought of that all right. Did I ever? But after I got home and calmed down, I decided it was probably just some guy taking a shortcut home through the alley. I'm not sure he tried to catch me. I didn't wait around to find out." The girls laughed some more, but then April sobered up enough to mention that Toby's crimes weren't going entirely unnoticed. Fooling everybody and lying about the Oracle.
"Lie to you?" Toby said. "I did not. I didn't lie once. I just gave the wrong impression. There's a difference.
Besides, I should think you'd be grateful to me for going to all that trouble just to keep things livened up. My dad says that livening things up is a most outstanding talent. But what I think is, somebody has to do it, or else everything would just lie there and turn to dust.
Okay, Melanie said. So you really livened up the Oracle. You livened it up so much that Marshall thinks it's going to tell him where security is. What are you going to do about that?
What am I going to do about that? Toby said indignantly. That's what I got you out here to ask you. What are we going to do about Marshall?
Well, April and Melanie said to each other, only just with a look, not out loud. Wasn't that like a boy? They got things into a mess and then expected a girl to get them out of it. But since Toby was admitting he needed their help, they were willing to give it. And it didn't take them long to decide on a plan. April would conduct the ceremony that afternoon, and she would pretend to read something off the back of the paper. It would say that security had gone on a trip to visit his relatives in Los Angeles, and that he would be home in a few days. Marshall wouldn't be completely happy about it, but at least it would give them a little more time to look for security, or to think of something else. Then, Melanie explained, if we never can find him, at least Marshall will have a few days to get used to the idea, a little at a time. When you lose something like security, it helps if you can do it sort of gradually. And Toby and April agreed that that was probably true. Marshall was eager and happy when they picked him up at nursery school. Apparently, he was absolutely positive that the Oracle was going to find his octopus for him. In Egypt, April got ready to be the High Priestess again, because she had practiced just what she was going to say. Fortunately, there wasn't much chance of an argument. When it came to conducting ceremonies, Ken and Elizabeth were definitely the spectator type. Everything was going smoothly until April took down the question, and with a dramatic flourish, got ready to pretend to read. But then, instead of starting in on her speech about Los Angeles, her mouth dropped open, and nothing came out except a strange gulping sound. Toby bounded into the temple and snatched the paper from her hand. Then he looked at April in a strange way, and they both walked over to where the rest of the Egyptians were waiting. On the back of the paper, in a fine, pointy, old-fashioned-looking handwriting, it said, "Look under the throne of Set." Toby read it out loud, very slowly and hesitantly, as if he didn't really believe what he was saying. And while everyone else was still standing as if paralyzed, Marshall went into the temple and lifted up the piece of old bedspread that covered the egg crate altar of Set. He reached inside, felt around for a minute, and then his face lit up with a smile so starry that for just a second the other, wiser Egyptians felt just as pleased with their oracle as he did. But after that, they went right back to being incredulous. April and Melanie looked hard at Toby, but he shook his head so hard his shaggy hair stood out like an umbrella.
"No, sir," he said wildly. "I didn't. I did not. I absolutely did not do it."
The girls looked at each other and nodded in agreement that Toby was telling the truth. Nobody, not even Toby, was that good an actor.
"Toby didn't do it," Marshall said, hugging a slightly damp octopus to his chest. "Set did it."
"Set did what?" April asked, staring at Marshall in consternation.
"Set took security.
I left him right there on the ground, like I thought, and in the night time, Set took him.
Sheesh!
Ken moaned all of a sudden, clapping his fist violently to his forehead. I knew it. I knew all you guys were going to crack up some day if you didn't quit fooling around with this hocus-pocus stuff.
Nobody's cracking up, Toby said thoughtfully. But something pretty fishy is going on around here.
You're telling me, Ken said. And if somebody doesn't start telling me what it is, I'm going to walk right out of here and resign from the whole Egyptian race.
I guess we better, huh?
Toby said to April and Melanie.
I mean, tell everybody all about everything?
The girls nodded. So they went ahead and told the other three all about what Toby had done, and what Toby hadn't done. And when they were through, they all stood and looked at the temple that they had made themselves, out of ordinary stuff and their own imaginations, and felt, well, maybe a little like Dr. Frankenstein had when he created the monster. They just stood there, looking for a while, and wondering. And then they all went home. Fear strikes. The next 2 or 3 days, the Egyptians met in Egypt as usual, but they didn't play games or consult the oracle. It was damp, drippy weather, but with no real rain, and they all just sat around on the floor of the temple in the darkening late afternoons and talked and talked. Toby and April wanted to try the oracle once more to see what would happen, but no one else seemed very enthusiastic. Oh, they said okay, but somehow it kept getting put off. They talked about it, but that was all. They talked about a lot of things, actually. Christmas wasn't far away, and that's always a good topic for conversation. But there was one subject they kept coming back to. Security. Where had security been? How had he gotten from wherever Marshall had left him to the hiding place beneath the altar of Set? And who had written the message? There were dozens of theories, more or less realistic, depending on the mood of the moment. There were times when they all favored practical theories. Some other kids might have found out about the game and tried to be funny. But as time went by, and no one burst in on them to gloat about the successful trick, that seemed less and less likely. Or someone of their own group might have been guilty, just as Toby had been at first. But no one would confess, and there just didn't seem to be any reasonable how and why to support a conclusion of that sort. Then there was the man Toby had seen in the alley. But no one could come up with an even slightly reasonable explanation of who he was and how he could have known about the oracle. Of course, the subject of the murders and the murderer came up, as it often still did throughout the neighborhood. It was still an unsolved mystery, and a terribly real and dangerous one. But fortunately, here again, there seemed to be no logical reason to believe that that mystery could have any connection to the mystery of the oracle. Why would a murderer fool around writing messages about a missing toy? There seemed to be no possible answer. At other times, when the afternoon was almost over and disturbing shadows crept across the storage yard, a different kind of theory went the rounds. Somebody brought up the story of the curse of King Tut, and pointed out that lots of people actually believed that a mysterious magic power from the days of the pharaohs was strong enough to do terrible things to anyone who stirred it up. What if somehow, in their ceremonies and things, they'd managed to stumble on a way to do some stirring up themselves. Things like that had happened. Everyone had read something or seen something on TV like that. And they all began to remember strange things that had happened. Once, when Melanie had touched the crocodile stone, she was sure she'd felt it move under her fingers. And another time, when Toby had gotten to Egypt early and alone, he'd had the strangest feeling that someone was watching him. Once they got going on that sort of thing, they all had stories and experiences to tell. That is, all except Marshall. He just sat, holding security on his lap and listening. And if he had any theories about mysterious powers or hidden watchers, he kept them strictly to himself. Then one evening there was to be a concert at the university, and the Rosses decided to go. They were planning to take Melanie, but since Marshall had a way of going to sleep at concerts, it seemed best to leave him at home. April had some homework to do anyway, and she agreed to come down and babysit until the Rosses got back. It was around 7:30 when Melanie called to say they were leaving, and April said she would be right down. It wasn't until she started to get her things together that she realized her math book was missing. She looked all over the apartment, but she couldn't find it anywhere. At last, she had to give up and go without it. When April got to the second floor, the Rosses were waiting for her in the hall. As soon as they saw her, they waved goodbye and got in the elevator. Marshall was standing in the doorway. "Hello," he said. "They said you were coming to visit." Marshall didn't like people to say babysitter, but he didn't mind having someone visit him while his folks were away. So April took some time to make it a real visit before she started her own work. They played a game of mousetrap, and April read aloud a short book about a hippopotamus. Then Marshall went back to something he was doing with a box and two orange juice cans, and April started her homework. It was just about then that she finally remembered what had probably happened to her math book. That afternoon, in Egypt, she'd put her books down on the edge of the temple floor, and Ken had been fooling around and knocked them off. He'd sort of picked them up when she yelled at him, but he must have left the math book on the ground. April sat there fuming for a few minutes, getting madder and madder at Ken. It was all his fault. For the first time in her life, she had been getting pretty good grades in math, and now her record was going to be ruined, all because of Ken. Mrs. Granger was terribly strict about getting assignments in on time. All of a sudden, she jumped up. "Marshall," she called, "do your folks have a flashlight?" When Marshall came back with a flashlight, she told him what she had in mind. "Aren't you scared?" Marshall asked. Now that he'd mentioned it, April had to admit to herself that she was. But being scared and chickening out were two different things. Being scared to do something had always made April more determined to do it than ever. Besides, if Toby could go down there all alone at night, so could she. "Me? Scared?" she said. "Don't be ridiculous." "Wait," Marshall said. He went in the bedroom and came out with his sweater and security. "Now, just a minute," April said. "You can't go. I won't let you." Marshall put his sweater on inside out, all by himself. "Don't be ridiculous," he said. "Your folks wouldn't like it," April argued. "I'll only be gone a minute. You're going to wait right here." Marshall was puzzling over his buttons, which were on the wrong side, and he didn't answer. "I mean it," April said. "Whether you like it or not, you are only 4 years old, and I am taking care of you, and you have to do what I say. And I say that you are going to stay right here and—" Marshall gave up on the buttons. He picked up security and walked out the door, into the hallway. He aimed himself down the stairs toward where the landlady lived. "I'll yell," he said. For a few seconds, April stared at him in silence. Then she said some things under her breath, and because there didn't seem to be anything else to do, she took Marshall by the hand, and they started out. It was very quiet and very dark in the alley, and familiar things loomed up suddenly, huge and out of shape. The flashlight beam, none too steady in April's hand, made trash bins crouch and garbage pails lurk, and a length of hose slither against a wall. Imagination is a great thing in long, dull hours, but it's a real curse in a dark alley, and April's imagination had always been out of the ordinary. She would have hated to admit it, but right at that moment, even a 4-year-old was a little bit comforting. Especially a 4-year-old who could march steadfastly by a garbage can that had suddenly developed a hunchback and great lopsided eyes, without even seeming to notice. It was April's imagination that made trouble when they got to the fence, because if she hadn't been imagining, she wouldn't have been so nervous. And if she hadn't been so nervous, she wouldn't have pushed the board the wrong way. All the Egyptians always pushed it to the right, and it no longer squeaked when it swung that way. But that night, probably because of the nervousness, April grabbed the board and shoved it the wrong way. And the big